It's Barbara Park, obviously I'm the choir director. Good morning to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We welcome all people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you, no matter what your age, your abilities, or inabilities. And towards the end of this service, we will invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves and let us know how you got here, so that, tell us a little about yourselves so that we get to know you. On Sunday morning, we provide a wide variety of services, either by Prairie members, members of the wider community, our minister, Ralph Tuzinski, and today, Jim Riley will be presenting our program, and he has been here before, comes down from Minneapolis, and did the noon musicale on Friday at First Society, and then is willing to stay on and do a program for us. I wanted just to say that this morning's program is of music and readings. By women, mainly by women composers, although I had to really stretch to find readings about music or about mothers, which we also include since this is Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. For some reason that was just, I thought, well, I can just Google this, and I had a hard time. But anyway, all the music and most of the readings are by women. So next we're going to have Paula Pichars start our music, well not start, but continue our music portion with Downhearted Blues. So am I being brought to us? No, okay. I wanted to share a little bit about the two women. I don't want to take too long. I'll tell a few facts about their lives and then I'll pass around their bios. Lovie Austin was a pianist, composer, and a band leader. She was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee in 1887. She wrote many of the classic songs of the early blues era, and she was recorded by major singers like Bessie Smith, Alberta Hunter, Ida Cox. She toured and recorded with her group, the Blues Serenaders, and she worked for 20 years as the music director of Chicago's Monogram Theater. She was cited by Mary Lou Williams as a key influence on her career. She attended Roger Williams College, and when it closed, completed her studies at Knoxville College, and which was an unusual education for black women of her generation. And with that, she could have gone into a more genteel profession, but she chose the more lucrative and exciting world of live entertainment and playing piano and performing in the black vaudeville circuit. Alberta Hunter, it was so interesting. When I get to sing and research some of these composers and singers, their lives are so fascinating. She was born in Memphis. She ran away to Chicago at the age of 8. She had a very poor childhood and difficult childhood. She started singing as a girl in a brothel nearby, but she was protected and watched over and befriended by the prostitutes, and she always said prostitutes were the best people in the world. And she gradually went up to more upscale bistros and upscale nightclubs. She was briefly married, but her marriage was never consummated, and perhaps it was about that time she realized that she was a lesbian. Shortly after, she met Lottie. She met a woman with whom she lived many years of her life. Lottie Taylor was her name. She had a very successful career. She became a full-fledged star. She was billed as a sweetheart of Dreamland. She traveled, she was in productions, she sang in Showboat with Paul Robeson. She, during the World War, she went on the USO tour throughout Europe. When she returned, she had been taking care of her mother all this time, paying for her mother's care. And when her mother died in 1956, Alberta Hunter decided to quit music She took training as a nurse and became a nurse. At this time, she was 59 years old, and she continued her nursing career for the next 20 years. And she retired. The hospital where she worked forced her to retire in 1977, believing that she was at the mandatory retirement age of 70, when in fact she was 82. So soon after she retired, she met a contact from her former musical career who encouraged her to get back into it, which she did, and she had an incredible comeback. She was a great success. She started playing, touring again, and she was a favorite of Jimmy Carter. You know, she went to the White House several times, and she just had an incredible career. So I'll pass around those bios.
Well, now it's my absolute pleasure to introduce to you Jim Riley. Jim has been a friend of mine since we were kids in the Universalist Church in Syracuse, New York, so that is going back a ways. I watched him learn to play the piano and then learn to play the organ from, you know, like the sidelines and cheering, and we were in the youth choir together, and so we definitely go back a ways. In the meantime, he's gone on to work in a number of churches as music director and accompanies and teaches music and has developed his wonderful tenor voice, which he shared with us this morning in the choir, for which we were just intensely grateful, because that was a difficult piece. He most recently has worked in the Vinderkuchen, which is a Norwegian church in Minneapolis, for which, of course, he had to learn Norwegian to follow the Norwegian service. They had two services, if I'm right, one in Norwegian and one in English. So he didn't know Norwegian when he got there, but he has gotten a wonderful repertoire of Scandinavian music since he went to church there, and sings in such language as Icelandic, which is very impressive. So he spoke to us last year on Mother's Day. This seems to be getting to be a habit. So we're delighted to welcome him this morning.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you for having me back today. Last year we had a Women Composers Program, in which now in retrospect we're calling Women Composers 1, because this is Women Composers 2. And we began with a piece this morning on the piano by Marianne Martinez from the 18th century. She was a friend of Haydn. She was trained originally as a singer. At that point in history, it was still somewhat rare to have a woman composer. The great explosion of women composers in numbers came in the 19th century with the expansion of the piano to everyone's living room, or at least everyone in the middle class, and with the great expansion of the middle class. Piano playing came to be an ornament for women. It made them more marriageable. It was not exactly meant yet to be a profession, but you know, when someone learns to play the piano and discovers they have a great talent for it and discovers that they can also compose, it's not always easy, despite the pressures of society, to keep them in their place. So there was, you'll find if you do research in women composers, that all of a sudden there's this small, low graph, this is the total number of women, and then all of a sudden it goes like that. The opposite of the way the stock market went. And we heard last year how Fanny Mendelssohn, from a very wealthy and accomplished family, with a brother who became, of course, Felix Mendelssohn, the famous composer, how she was encouraged to develop her talents fully, except that she was not supposed to use them professionally, because that would not be feminine. And we heard how Clara Schumann, the great pianist, a great pianist of the 19th century, and the wife of Robert Schumann, became discouraged about her own composing, despite the fact that she wrote some wonderful music, and came to believe that women couldn't be composers, that they never had been and that they never would be. She was ignorant of history because there already had been women composers. So the next three piano solos are more or less from that explosion of women composers that came through the piano. We have a piece by Fanny Mendelssohn, one of the few repeat composers that we have from last year. And, you know, this piece has a title, O Traum der Jungen, O Goldene Stern, O Dream of Youth, O Golden Star. And you really don't know what significance this title had for Fanny Mendelssohn. It seems that it was a dream of youth that perhaps was unrealized. And then we follow that with a piano piece that's far more ambitious because Cécile Chaminade wrote music that was intended both for salon performance and for concert performance. She was married early in her life to a much older man who died. She never remarried, never had children. And as soon as her husband died, she commenced touring as a pianist. She was famous all over the world, both as a pianist and as a composer. The fact that she had such success was despite the fact that she was a woman, and she received praise such as from the composer Ambroise Thomas, who said, "She is not a woman who composes, but a composer who happens to be a woman," because that was still rare. And then finally, we have a piece by perhaps someone you've never heard of, Agatha Baka Grandal, who was a contemporary of Grieg. Her dates are wrong in the program, and that's my fault. They're 1847 to 1907. So she was born in the same year as Grieg, and she was a friend of Grieg's. This is her only piano piece of all the ones I have seen that has some reference to Norwegian folklore, so to speak, to the Hulders. And it's really unfortunate that I should have to talk about the Hulders on Mother's Day. The Hulders are sort of daughters of trolls. They're extremely attractive women when you meet them. They seduce you, and then they show their true colors. They're quite insatiable. They wear out their men. And there are two ways you can tell that a beautiful woman you meet is a Hulder and not just a beautiful woman. One way is that she has a tail. It's considered extremely impolite to point this out. And the other way is if you manage to get behind her, she's actually hollow and looks like a hollowed out tree trunk from behind. It's a shell. So some Jungian already hasn't had a field day with the Hulders. It's going to have a field day with the Hulders. And the Hulderschlot is the dance of the Hulders. So those are the three pieces we'll hear.
We're interspersing the piano pieces with readings. And this one is by Mary Oliver, who we got to hear, some of us, at General Assembly a few years ago, which was a fabulous treat. And this is called The Whistler. All of a sudden, she began to whistle. By all of a sudden, I mean that for more than 30 years, she had not whistled. It was thrilling. At first, I wondered, who was in the house? What stranger? I was upstairs reading, and she was downstairs. As from the throat of a wild and cheerful bird, not caught, but visiting, the sound warbled and slid and doubled back and larked and soared. Finally, I said, "Is that you? Is that you whistling?" "Yes," she said. "I used to whistle a long time ago. Now I see I can still whistle." And cadence after cadence, she strolled through the house whistling. "I know her so well, I think," I thought. elbow and ankle, mood and desire, anguish and frolic, anger too, and the devotions. And for all that, do we ever begin to know each other? Who is this I've been living with for 30 years? This clear, dark, lovely Whistler.
This poem is Her Door by Mary Leader, and it was written for her daughter, Sarah Marie. There was a time her door was never closed. Her music box played for Reese and Plinks. Her crib new bought, I drew her sleeping there. The little drawing sits beside my chair. These days she ornaments her hands with rings. She's 17, her door is one I knock. There was a time I daily brushed her hair by window light. I bathed her in the sink, in sunny water, in the kitchen there. I've bought her several thousand things to wear, and now this boy buys her silver rings. He goes inside her room and shuts the door. Those days to rock her was a form of prayer. She'd gaze at me and blink, and I would sing of bees and horses in the pasture there. The drawing sits as still as naptime air, her curled up hand, that precious line, her cheek. Next year her door will stand again ajar, but she herself will not be living there.
A Pupil by Donald Justice. Picture me, the shy pupil at the door, one small tight fist clutching the dread sure's knee. Back then time was still harmony, not money. And I could spend a whole week practicing for that moment on the threshold, then to take courage and enter and pass among the mysterious scents and sit quite straight and with a frail confidence assault the keyboard with a childish flourish, only to lose my place or forget the key and almost doubt the very metronome outside, the traffic, the laborers going home, and still to bear on across Chopin or Brahms, stupid and wild with love equally for the storms of C sharp minor or the calms of C. Now we're going to have you stay seated for a postlude of our last treat by Jim. Our piano has never had such a workout since last year at this time. And then go home with music in your hearts and dance step in your feet. But in the meantime, join us for coffee.